should come in. Talk to me face to face.
Not yet. Do your job and I'll think about it.
I am doing my job. I'm hunting a fugitive. You killed that girl, not some guy whose name you claim you heard as big as a house.
One more thing. I think the guy called Chenko also goes by the name of Charlie and is James Barr's friend.
Why?
The description. Small guy, dark, with black hair that sticks up like a brush.
James Barr has got a Russian friend? Not according to our inquiries.
Like I said, do your job.
We're doing it. Nobody mentioned a Russian friend.
He sounds American. I think he was involved with what happened on Friday, which means maybe this whole crew was involved.
Involved how?
I don't know, but I plan to find out. I'll call you tomorrow.
You'll be in jail tomorrow.
Like I'm in jail now? Dream on, Emerson.
Where are you?
Close by. Sleep well, detective. He clicked the phone off and put Emerson's number back in his pocket and took out Helen Roden's, dialed it, then moved around the concrete pillar into deep shadow.
Yes?
This is Reacher.
Are you okay? The cop is right outside my door now.
Suits me. Suits him, too, I expect. He's probably getting $40 an hour for the overtime.
They put your face on the 6 o'clock news. It's a big story.
Don't worry about me.
Where are you?
Free and clear. Making progress. I saw Charlie. I gave Emerson his plate number. Are you making progress?
Not really. All I've got is 5 random names. No reason I can see why anybody told James Barr to shoot any one of them.
You need Franklin. You need research.
I can't afford Franklin.
I want you to find that address in Kentucky for me.
Kentucky?
Where James Barr went to shoot. Reacher heard her juggle the phone and flip through paper. Then she came back and read out an address. It meant nothing to Reacher. A road, a town, a state, a zip.
What's Kentucky got to do with anything?
Reacher heard a car on the street, close by to his left, fat tires rolling slow. He slid around the pillar and looked. A PD prowl car, crawling, lights off. 2 cops in the front, craning their necks, looking right, looking left. Gotta go, he said. He clicked the phone off and put it on the ground at the base of the pillar. Emerson's caller ID would have trapped the number, and any cell phone's physical location could be tracked by the recognition pulse that it sends to the network, once every 15 seconds, regular as clockwork. So Reacher left the phone in the dirt and headed west, 40 feet below the raised roadbed. 10 minutes later, he was opposite the back of the black glass tower, in the shadows under the highway, facing the vehicle ramp. There was an empty cop car parked at the curb. It looked still and cold, settled, like it had been there for a spell. The guy outside Helen's door, Reacher thought. He crossed the street and walked down the ramp, into the underground garage. The concrete was all painted dirty white, and there were fluorescent tubes blazing every 15 feet. There were pools of light and pools of darkness. Reacher felt like he was walking out of the wings across a succession of brightly lit stages. The ceiling was low. There were fat, square pillars holding up the building. The service corps was in the center. The whole space was cold and silent and about 40 yards deep and maybe 3 times as wide. 40 yards deep. Just like the new extension on First Street. Reacher stepped over and put his back against the front wall, walked all the way across to the back wall. 35 paces. He turned like a swimmer at the end of a lap and walked back. 35 paces. He crossed diagonally to the far corner. The garage was dark back there. He threaded between 2 NBC vans and found the blue Ford Mustang he guessed belonged to Ann Yanni. It was clean and shiny, recently waxed. It had small windows because of the convertible top, a raked windshield, tinted glass. He tried the passenger door. Locked. He moved around the hood and tried the driver's door. The handle moved. Unlocked. He glanced around and opened the door. No alarm. He reached inside and touched the unlock button. There was a triple thunk as both door locks and the trunk lock unlatched. He closed the driver's door and stepped back to the trunk. The spare tire was under the floor. Nested inside the wheel were the jack and a length of metal pipe that both worked the jack and undid the wheel nuts. He took the pipe out and closed the trunk, stepped around to the passenger side and opened the door, and got inside the car. The interior smelled of perfume and coffee. He opened the glove box and found a stack of road maps and a small leather folder the size of a purse diary. Inside the folder were an insurance slip and an auto registration, both made out to Ms. Janine Lorna Ann Yanny at a local Indiana address. He put the folder away again and closed the glove box, found the right levers, and lowered his seat as far as it would go. He reclined the back all the way, which wasn't far. Then he moved the whole seat backward to give himself as much leg room as he could get. He untucked his shirt and rested the pipe in his lap and lay back in the seat. Stretched. He had about 3 hours to wait. He tried to sleep. Sleep when you can, was the old army rule. First thing Emerson did was contact the phone company. He confirmed that the number his caller ID had caught was a cell phone. The service contract was written out to a business operating under the name Specialized Services of Indiana. Emerson tasked a first-year detective to track the business and told the phone company to track the phone. Initial progress was mixed. Specialized Services of Indiana dead-ended because it was owned by an offshore trust in Bermuda and had no local address. But the phone company reported that the cell phone was stationary and was showing up on 3 cells at once, which meant it had to be in the downtown area and would be easy to triangulate. Rosemary Barr sweet-talked her way past the Board of Corrections desk on the 6th floor of the hospital and was granted an out-of-hours visit with her brother. But when she got to his room, she found he was deeply asleep. Her sweet talk was wasted. She sat for 30 minutes, but James didn't wake up. She watched the monitors. His heartbeat was strong and regular. His breathing was fine. He was still handcuffed, and his head was still clamped, but his body was perfectly still. She checked his chart to make sure he was being properly cared for. She saw the doctor's scribbled note. Possible early onset PA? She had no idea what that meant, and late in the evening she couldn't find anyone willing to explain it to her. The phone company marked the cell phone's location on a large-scale city map and faxed it to Emerson. Emerson tore it out of the machine and spent 5 minutes trying to make sense of it. He was expecting to find the 3 arrows meeting at a hotel, or a bar, or a restaurant. Instead, they met on a vacant lot under the raised highway. He had a brief image in his mind of Reacher sleeping rough in a cardboard box. Then he concluded that the phone was abandoned, which was confirmed 10 minutes later by the patrol car he sent out to check. And then, just for formality's sake, he fired up his computer and entered the plate numbers Reacher had given him. They came back as late-model Cadillac DeVilles, both black, both registered to Specialized Services of Indiana. He wrote "dead end" on the sheet of paper and dropped it in a file. Reacher woke up every time he heard the elevator motors start. The sound whined down the shaft through the cables and the moving cars rumbled. The first 3 times were false alarms, just anonymous office people heading home after a long day at work. Every 40 minutes or so, they came down alone and walked wearily to their cars and drove away. 3 times the tang of cold exhaust fumes drifted, and 3 times the garage went quiet again, and 3 times Reacher went back to sleep. The 4th time, he stayed awake. He heard the elevator start and checked his watch. 11:45. Showtime. He waited and heard the elevator doors open. This time it wasn't just another lone guy in a suit. It was a big crowd, 8 or 10 people. Noisy. It was the whole cast and crew from the NBC affiliate's 11 o'clock news. Reacher pressed himself down in the Mustang's passenger seat and hid the tire iron underneath the tails of his shirt. It was cold against the skin of his stomach. He stared up at the fabric roof and waited. A heavy guy in baggy jeans passed through the darkness within 5 feet of the Mustang's front fender. He had a ragged gray beard and was wearing a Grateful Dead t-shirt under a torn cotton cardigan. Not on-screen talent. Maybe a cameraman. He walked on toward a silver pickup and climbed inside. Then came a man in a sharkskin suit and orange makeup. He had big hair and white teeth. definitely on-screen talent. Maybe weather, maybe sports. He passed by on the Mustang's other side and got into a white Ford Taurus. Then came three women together, young, casual dress, maybe the studio director and the floor manager and the vision mixer. They squeezed between the Mustang's trunk and a broadcast van. The car rocked three times as they nudged it. Then they split up and headed for their own separate rides. Then came three more people. Then came Ann Yanni. Reacher didn't notice her individually until she put her hand on her car's door handle. She paused and called something out to one of the others. She got an answer, said something else, and then opened the door. She came in butt first, swiveling and ducking her head. She was wearing old jeans and a new silk blouse. It looked expensive. Reacher guessed she had been on camera, but at an anchor's desk, visible from the waist up only. Her hair was stiff with spray. She dumped herself in the seat and shut her door. Then she glanced to her right. "Keep very quiet," Reacher said to her, "or I'll shoot you." He jabbed the tire iron at her under his shirt. Half inch wide, long and straight. It looked plausible. She stared at it in shock. Face to face, 2 feet away, she looked thinner and older than she looked on the television screen. There were fine lines all around her eyes, full of makeup. But she was very beautiful. She had impossibly perfect features, bold and vivid and larger than life, like most TV people. Her blouse had a formal collar but was open three buttons, prim and sexy at the same time. "Hands where I can see them, in your lap." He didn't want her to go for the horn. "Keys on the console." He didn't want her to hit the panic button. The new Fords he had driven had a little red button on the remote fob. He assumed it set off an alarm. "Just sit tight. Nice and quiet. We'll be okay." He clicked the button on his side and locked the car.
"I know who you are."
"So do I." He kept the tire iron in place and waited. Yanni sat still, hands in her lap, breathing hard, looking more and more scared as all around them her colleagues' cars started up. Blue haze drifted. People drove away one by one. No backward glances. The end of a long day. "Keep very quiet," Reacher said again as a reminder. "Then we'll be okay." Yanni glanced left, glanced right, tension in her body. "Don't do it. Don't do anything, or I'll pull the trigger. Gut shot. A thigh. You'll take 20 minutes to bleed out. Lots of pain."
"What do you want?"
"I want you to be quiet and sit still. Just for a few more minutes." She clamped her teeth and went quiet and sat still. The last car drove away. The white Taurus, the guy with the hair, the weatherman or sportscaster. There was tire squeal as he turned and engine noise as he gunned up the ramp. Then those sounds faded out and the garage went completely silent.